are Locked On 49ers, your daily San Francisco 49ers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Brian Peacock here with you once again. This Tuesday episode is going to be a little crossover. I caught up with Cody Rourke, who is the host of Locked On Broncos. He's going to talk a little bit about the Denver Broncos, their draft, and the 49ers, and get to know each other a little bit and talk a little bit about what potentially could happen between the 49ers and the Broncos if John Lynch and John Elway got on the phone together and maybe tried to consummate a little trade. There's some needs that might meet together here between these two teams. I do want to remind everybody before we get to this crossover conversation to follow me on Twitter at BD Peacock. You can hit me up via email, lockedon49ers@gmail.com. That's the best place to get any mailbag questions in to me. And we're going to do a little mailbag again on Wednesday, as we usually do with Mr. Nick Winkler on another Winky Wednesday episode tomorrow. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review the show. We're on iTunes, we're on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher. Everywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Locked On 49ers. And you can also find the streams of the show and other links to where to subscribe at lockedon49ers.com, as well as a multitude of other articles. And with that, let's get to today's guest, who, by the way, is not Adam Schefter. Okay, here we are again, a crossover episode, Locked On Broncos and Locked On 49ers. Brian Peacock here with you of Locked On 49ers. I'm with Cody Rourke, host of Locked On Broncos. Cody, man, how are you? Great to talk to you once again.
No, man, I'm doing great. Thanks again for having me. I love when we do these crossover shows because our fans, our listeners always love hearing that other perspective from another fan base. And obviously, we always have to talk about the tie between John Lynch, John Elway, the Denver Broncos, and there's always that connection there. So always great to hop on here with you, Brian, and talk Broncos and 49ers.
Absolutely, absolutely. So big draft. I mean, you know, big free agency and draft happenings, I think, for the 49ers. There's some and Broncos as well. And I think the Broncos really got a good one. That he was the one guy I was really hoping might slip to the 49ers in the first round. And I'm fine with the 49ers, what the 49ers did in the draft. But the first thing I want to talk about here, and I think there's something we could do with the Broncos and the 49ers, and maybe play a little matchmaker here, because I got to believe, as you mentioned, John Lynch has or will make a call to John Elway about Shane Ray. And we've talked before about these connections between the teams. Adam Peters was on staff when Denver drafted Ray. So what is the edge depth chart like now in Denver? And is there actually a player that could be moved from that squad?
Absolutely. So right now, with the addition of Bradley Chubb, Vance Joseph came out right away and said Bradley Chubb is going to play outside backer for the Denver Broncos opposite of Von Miller in their 3-4 scheme. Now, that complicates things, as you mentioned, with Shane Ray. Shane Ray, the Broncos decided to decline his fifth-year option heading into this year, so that's a pretty big move for them. This is a big year for Shane Ray in terms of playing for a contract, but at this point, the Denver Broncos are leaning more towards signing Shaquille Barrett to a more of an extended deal than Shane Ray. Now, Shane Ray, you know, a guy who all of last season he battled an injury, obviously that wrist injury in training camp. He had to have surgery. He didn't get a play until week 8 against Kansas City Chiefs on Monday Night Football, and he was very limited. He lost a lot of weight. I believe he lost 20 pounds that he usually, you know, is playing at. And so when he was playing, he was limited by that with weight and also playing with one hand. He didn't have enough power in his hand that he used to pass rush. And we saw him try to make a lot of one-arm tackles often at times, and he just had a frustrating year. And so more so, he has a lot to prove this year, but his disappointment more so isn't necessarily in his control with that injury thing. However, the Broncos look at that injury history, and there's a lot of question marks there. So at that point, I would not be surprised if John Lynch picks up the phone and talks to John Elway about, hey, you know, we like your guy that you have a lot. And I'm sure they can obviously exchange some different and talented type players in this type of deal, or even some draft picks. But, you know, this opens it up for Shane Ray to hit the market next year. And there's been a lot of talk about him potentially, if he is a free agent, going to the Kansas City Chiefs next offseason. So if John Lynch wanted to make a move, it would have to be this year before the trade deadline, unless they can really influence him to come to San Francisco in the offseason of next year. But as of right now, you know, this is probably going to be Shane Ray's last year as a Denver Bronco, barring some sort of major setback to a pass rusher.
And I think I read something somewhere where Shane Ray was had his weight way down to like maybe 220 pounds or something like that, and he's back up around 245 or 250. Is there truth to that?
Yeah, so he lost about 20 pounds, and his normal playing weight, I think, you know, 2 years ago was around 245. He's at 248 right now, and he said this is the heaviest he's been, and he's very focused. And, you know, pictures and video coming out of Dove Valley during OTAs, he looks pretty big, he looks pretty lean, and that's a good thing for him, you know, heading into this year. But he's got his weight back on, and that bodes very well for him. His hand's a lot stronger. He's been doing a lot of off-season physical therapy. So things are working out more so for Shane Ray in that regard. He's very hungry, and his mindset is to keep working in 2018. So I think this is an audition year for him, for maybe even the Broncos or even other teams around the National Football League.
And one more quick question about that position group for you and the Broncos. So obviously Bradley Chubb is the big addition there. And is there any early returns, any early reports about how he's looking, like from OTAs and early rookie mini camps and things like that?
So usually Denver Broncos veteran defensive players, they come out in the media and they say, we don't get to know the young guys' names until they've made the roster, but they cannot stop talking about Bradley Chubb now, defensive end, Derek Wolfe, Von Miller, Chris Harris Jr., Darian Stewart, guys like that, some veterans on this Broncos coveted defense. They are loving what they're seeing from Bradley Chubb, and they're really comparing it to what they see on the outside from Von Miller. They say you have Von Miller on the outside with his speed and his athletic ability to come off the edge, and with Bradley Chubb, you have a guy who's big and physical and has that athletic ability to come off the edge. They're looking at it as a scary tandem right now for the orange and blue on the opposite side of things, and combine that with the interior of Domantas Peko and Derek Wolfe, man, at the DN and D tackle spots. Right now for the Denver Broncos, they can do a lot of things, and specifically they can even rotate Shaquille Barrett and Bradley Chubb, or Shane Ray and Bradley Chubb, between a defensive end, outside linebacker, you know, type positions at the same exact time, to where they can get all their good guys on the field. So, you know, a lot of reports out of Dove Valley early on, very, very impressive. They're excited to see what he can do, and we're probably not going to see much of him in the NFL preseason, probably a few series here and there. They don't want to get their first round pick hurt right away, but he's going to be a starter for the Broncos come week one against the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah, stud player. He's the power-speed combination, and I thought maybe the teams that ran a strict 4-3 would prefer Chubb just to be that stud defensive end because he's got the power element too, but I think he's plenty athletic to play the 3-4 outside linebacker, and with how often teams are in the sub this day and age, he's going to have his hand on the ground probably most of the time anyway.
Absolutely. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people are excited about for the Denver Broncos, at least from what I'm being told inside the organization. They like what they can do, the possibilities they have with different matchup scenarios against different offenses, with the amount of guys they have in that pass rush room. So they're working a lot of pass rushers inside with the D-line coach just to work on those get-offs and the ability to strike and club. They're mixing up that kind of delegation a little bit this year with those position groups, and it's exciting to see. But, you know, overall, I think that was a good pickup for the Denver Broncos. Now to touch base on draft picks. So for the 49ers, I like the pick that they have with obviously Mike McGlinchey at right tackle, a guy that they definitely needed to pick up. Given the state of the NFC West with obviously the Los Angeles Rams right now on paper having a very scary pass rush, protecting Jimmy Garoppolo is priority number one for the San Francisco 49ers. What are your takeaways from the first pick, you know, obviously for the 49ers in round one with McGlinchey at right tackle?
It was really a surprising pick at the time, and maybe the 24 hours or so leading up to the draft, there was a lot of heat with the 49ers and Mike McGlinchey, and I thought, yeah, no, that doesn't make sense because they've got their two starting offensive tackles mixed in, and what we didn't know at the time is they were working the phones behind the scenes and had a deal worked out to send Trent Brown over to New England, and Trent Brown is one of the better pass-blocking right tackles in the NFL, but the thing is just his size, and he's just so big, and his movement skills aren't what Kyle Shanahan wanted in a run blocker in his scheme. So what they did is they identified the best offensive tackle in the draft. They knew Joe Staley's not getting any younger. He's got 2 years left on his deal, and he's already on the wrong side of 30. So they thought, okay, let's get a long-term offensive tackle in here because in 2 or 3 years, neither one of these guys might be around on the 49ers roster. And what they upgraded for sure is a run blocker at that right tackle spot. Mike McGlinchey from day one, first OTA, a practice and first snap, he was starting at that right tackle spot. So sort of like Bradley Chubb There was no question there. They plugged him in. He's the starter at right tackle. And so my question with Mike McGlinchey is I think Pro Football Focus had him as the number one run blocking tackle in college last year. So that's not going to be a problem. That's going to be a big upgrade of running the ball for Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers. Now, pass blocking wasn't terrible. He wasn't bad or anything, but that wasn't his number one thing. And there were maybe some better pass blockers, I think. And it could be technique. It could be maybe strength with his hands, because that's where he would just get his hands batted away. And just occasionally he would lose this quick strike sack to the opposing player. So, you know, if 49ers and Broncos get together, I would be a little bit worried about Von Miller coming off that right edge of the 49ers offense if Mike McGlinchey's out there as a rookie facing him. But the question here is, and it's totally worth it if he's a stud right tackle, but I think they got to feel like they thought they had a future left tackle as well. And in a couple of years, he's going to work in and take over for Joe Staley. And all reports out of camp have been that glowing about him as a person. He's a hardworking guy. You know, he was the CEO of the offense at Notre Dame. And Joe Staley has taken a liking to him and sort of a little brother situation there. And Mike McGlinchey said that Joe Staley, he couldn't have asked any more about him just being really great to him. Because you know how veterans can be. Sometimes you think a guy might come in and eventually take your job and they don't like it too much. It's not been that way at all. Joe Staley has really been one of my favorite 49ers since he showed up. And these are sort of the reasons why. And he's really taken him under his wing and really helped out Mike McGlinchey. So I think you got a long-term starter there. The big question is he a future stud left tackle, or is he just going to be a career right tackle for the 49ers?
So that's going to be the big question. And obviously, I look forward to seeing. Now, this is going to be the first year, Brian, where the Denver Broncos and the 49ers don't play each other in the NFL preseason. Yeah. But that leads up to the NFL regular season matchup, which I look forward to, is the Denver Broncos and the entire AFC West division take on the NFC West division this year in the series matchups. Now, at that point, you know, who knows what the NFL landscape is going to be like. I know I'm waiting and I'm biding my time for that, but, you know, people don't really realize how close we are to the start of the NFL regular season, and I couldn't be more excited with camp starting, with preseason coming up on us very quickly, and sooner, you know, we're going to realize the NFL regular season is here, and then we're going to be in full go. So the NFL offseason actually doesn't last as long as many think when you're actually talking about it every single day. So I look forward to that. Now, there were some question marks I know that the San Francisco 49ers had at wide receiver. You know, with Jimmy Garoppolo, they have a lot of young talent, but they were needing a guy who's a solidified presence. Now, what are your thoughts on Dez Bryant posting a picture on Instagram talking about, you know, he could be playing for the 49ers? He quickly deleted it, but as you know, people snag screenshots very quickly. What are your thoughts on the Dez Bryant Instagram post, the kind of cryptic message about playing for the 49ers?
Yeah, I think Dez is a smart man. I think he's reading the stock market there and seeing, okay, here's a team that's on the rise. They got a good young quarterback. They might have room for a veteran wide receiver like me. Dez Bryant probably looks at the roster and thinks, I don't recognize a lot of these names at the wide receiver position for the 49ers. But on the flip side of that, I think he's not really the greatest fit for what the 49ers need right now. I think Pierre Garçon is got that position locked down, and Kyle Shanahan loves Pierre Garçon. So if Pierre Garçon wasn't around, I would think Dez Bryant might be the player. But everybody that Kyle Shanahan has brought in has been an elite separator. He wants guys who can separate. He wants quickness. He wants speed down the field. He wants to go fast. Even with Jerick McKinnon, the running back that they brought in, everybody's just athletic is all heck that he's brought onto the offense as he's arrived. So I think Dez Bryant's probably not the right fit for the 49ers. Smart move on his part to try to dangle that out there. And yeah, the social media, man, it's funny how players use it. And I can't imagine what I'd be doing on social media if this popped up, you know, 15 years ago. And I was on Twitter when I was a younger kid. That would be very interesting. But yeah, I think Dez Bryant and the 49ers is probably very slim to none chance of actually happening.
And I think Dez Bryant, if he were to have a desire to play for the 49ers, as you mentioned, the culture that John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan are bringing to San Francisco 49ers, it is completely a team effort. You don't have this me component, which the media perception of Dez Bryant, I don't know if you had the chance to watch the All or Nothing with the Dallas Cowboys, but he is a me player. I need my touches. I need to get this. And that's not really a good fit, like you said, for the San Francisco 49ers and the vision that they have. And he hasn't generated a lot of interest yet as the NFL offseason has commenced since his release. So at this point, he's got one of two options. He's got to either change his approach or he's got to sit out on the sideline a little bit. I just don't see a team necessarily picking him up yet. We could see that towards the end of training camp or towards the earlier parts of preseason where a team that might desperately need a wide receiver might sign him. But as of right now, he's got to change a lot of things. But, you know, having Jimmy Garoppolo have a weapon like him to throw to, that would be very scary for the San Francisco 49ers and the state of the NFC West as well. So one more thing I wanted to talk to you about. Actually, two more things. We talk about the culture of the NFC West, and it's getting, you know, divisionally it's getting a little tougher. You know, you're getting that notoriety back between all those teams where they look competitive, except, you know, the Arizona Cardinals and the Seahawks right now are my biggest question marks. I have no idea what to expect from those teams based off of last year, and obviously the addition of Sam Bradford being their quarterback and obviously Josh Rosen being drafted as their guy. You know, you have that dilemma heading into camp. And then with the Seahawks, you really have no idea with the loss of the tight end of Jimmy Graham, what they really have in store, the defensive losses of the Seahawks, and obviously the addition for the 49ers and Richard Sherman. What do you think his leadership and his veteran ability, especially coming off an Achilles injury, can be for that young defense down there in San Francisco?
So far, Richard Sherman has been huge, and he's got that Achilles injury that he's still recovering from, so he hasn't been able to really get on the field and practice yet, so he's basically been a coach on the field, and for that aspect alone, I think he's been worth bringing in. And there's a lot of young players on that 49ers secondary, and he's played in this scheme that Robert Saleh brought over that he learned Richard Sherman's been playing this scheme longer than the 49ers defensive coordinator Robert Saleh, because Saleh basically learned it while Sherman was already there in Seattle and then took it over to Jacksonville as a linebacker coach before getting the defensive coordinator job in San Francisco. So Richard Sherman's been a coach on the field. He's really converted a lot of 49ers fans, and he was public enemy number one. I don't think there's a single guy, if you pulled 49ers fans 6 months ago, who was their least liked player in the NFL, it would probably be Richard Sherman. And I think a part of that is like a respect factor, knowing how good he is and knowing how good he's played against your teams and the big plays he's made against your teams. And then also, you know, being a vocal player while he's doing it. But it's been pretty wild. It's been pretty impressive to see how many 49ers fans have flipped on that and have welcomed him in, and him unblocking people on Twitter that were 49ers fans. And it's just like it's a group effort there on both sides with some healing. And I think Richard Sherman is going to be a very good fit. Hopefully he gets over those injuries and looks a little bit like he used to look in Seattle. Then it's a home run for the 49ers bringing him in, because, a lot of young players, and they need that veteran presence there on the defensive side of the ball for the 49ers. And real quick, before we move on here, I do want to remind everybody, we're doing a crossover episode here, Locked On Broncos, Locked On 49ers. And for all the original content from the Locked On Podcast Network, both podcast and written, on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And for all the content on your San Francisco 49ers, including crossover episodes like this, make sure you go to LockedOn49ers.com. Cody, where can Broncos fans find all of your coverage?
Absolutely. You can follow all the Locked On Broncos content at Locked On Sports, part of the Locked On NFL branch, as well as LockedOnBroncos.com. And if you want to catch my columns, I'm a columnist over at PredominantlyOrange.com, covering all things orange and blue. You get all the latest content here. And I love the work that you put out there, Brian, especially on LockedOn49ers.com. It's the perfect blend of audio and written content, so fans kind of get the best of both worlds with what you do. And I'm very excited about the Locked On Podcast Network continuing to grow.
I love it. I think I might just pull that last little bit of audio that you said and play it often on the show. I like that. Thanks for pumping me up there. I love it. And yeah, you're doing great work at Locked On. This network's been really fun to interact with all the other hosts and stuff. It's been really cool.
You know, it's a blessing. You know, we all get to share our ideas and our visions, philosophies, what we see from our teams. And I think that's important. You know, the last time we talked, Brian, we were talking about the question marks behind Reuben Foster, but there's been a lot of clarity over the last 2 weeks or so regarding his situation. Apparently, you know, it was his girlfriend making up a lot of things, and this negatively impacted his entire future. What is the latest rumblings down there in San Francisco regarding Reuben Foster in light of these things coming to light in terms of shedding on his innocence in this whole entire situation?
You know, it's one of the craziest stories I've seen for the 49ers, and since I've been covering the team closer, it's been pretty wild. And when the story broke, you thought, oh my God, this guy's career is going to be over. This is it for him. And then the 49ers stuck by his side, and you got to believe all along they kind of had this information that was going to eventually come out, but they couldn't be vocal about that. They just had to wait and say, you know, due process and say all the right things and let it play out in court. And then when his ex-girlfriend took the stand on his behalf, it wasn't a situation, and it's really a touchy situation, because domestic violence victims sometimes recant their stories, and it's not always, you know, you don't want to shame the victim. But in this case, it was pretty clear. She came out in court and even testified that she was actually committing felonies, stealing from him, and that she wanted to ruin his career, and that she had done this before and actually served jail time for falsely accusing a boyfriend in 2011. And so I've never heard testimony like this from someone that was recanting their story and really trying to come clean on some things. So it turns out that Reuben Foster was 100% not guilty of any of this stuff, and was in fact running away from her while she was throwing stuff at him and trying to create an altercation. So good on him for that. Good on the 49ers for standing by their guy. And they took some heat for that. A lot of people were immediately crying for the release of Reuben Foster and crushing the 49ers for not doing that right away. And so now we know why. And as soon as that court case was dismissed, Foster came back to practice. And so if he stays healthy and he's had some time to get healthy now through the end of the offseason and coming into training camp, he's an all-pro talent. And he's going to be a stud player. And now it's just up to the NFL. And there was a separate marijuana charge against him that got dismissed as well. So he still has one misdemeanor gun charge. There was a gun found at the house when the police came with that domestic violence. He bought it legally in Alabama, but it was not a legal gun to have loaded in California, which it was at the time. So that's the last thing he has to deal with. And we'll see what happens with the league. I think the league is still going to, you know, tack on some games here from both of these incidents combined. But as far as legally and his career being able to continue with the 49ers, it's been a big week and probably a huge relief for the 49ers and especially Reuben Foster. And so hopefully he hits the ground running when he's on the field and is that player that we saw in glimpses last year. And we'll see if he gets a couple games suspension from the NFL.
Well, you know, and I think, too, looking at this legal, you know, how everything unwound legally here, I believe that if the NFL hands down a suspension for Reuben Foster of any sort, I think he has a very legitimate case to appeal it and not sit out any games whatsoever. Yeah, obviously, you have the marijuana charge that was dismissed. He might go into the NFL program where they monitor him for a season. If he does good, they'll probably wean him off of it. Von Miller had to go through the same type of thing. As for the gun charge, I think, you know, you got to look at it one of two ways. I think that Roger Goodell and the NFL, they're very adamant on monitoring their players' off-field behavior. But I think with everything that Reuben Foster has been through and the fact that he's actually not guilty, he was not even, you know, considered close to even doing what this girl said and it happened to being her, I think that Reuben Foster plays every game. You know, barring any health injuries, health concerns, I think he plays every game in 2018. And good for him, though. You know, like you said, I would like to applaud Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch for taking their time and waiting to see how this thing goes, because often at times when there's no proof and the allegations come out and they're serious of the nature in which they were at the beginning, most NFL teams will release a guy like that. And how many times have we seen, you know, we read about an NFL player, an NBA player, or any type of professional sport prospect losing their career path because of an allegation that we end up finding out not being true 15, 10 years later, you know, when it's, you know, pretty much over with and there's no chance for that. So, you know, good for them on biding their time and having that patience and playing out the legal process. I think that's very important for these young men that are entering the NFL. And I think when you can get into Reuben Foster's situation, if he comes out on the other end of this with a very good perspective, what he's been through, I think next year and for years to come, he can be a very big vocal point for a lot of NFL rookies coming into the National Football League during the NFL Rookie Symposium. He can be a very prominent speaker about really identifying, be aware of who you surround yourself with, your associates. And I don't know, I tell this to my high school football players, who you associate with, it can get you in a lot of trouble. So I think it's always important to understand who is in your circle, who's there for your betterment. And, you know, luckily for Reuben Foster, you know, as of right now, he gets to come out on the other side of it a-okay in this whole entire situation. But yeah, he's a very promising player. I know I really wanted him back in 2017. I wanted him in Denver. We didn't get that to happen, but he's a phenomenal defensive player. Adding him to that defense alongside with the leadership of Richard Sherman, which I think that he would benefit tremendously from, I think that's huge for the 49ers organization, and I look forward to seeing how they transform in 2018.
I totally agree, and I think you see why NFL players And sometimes the smart ones isolate themselves, and maybe they might burn some bridges from some people they grew up with and were around when they were younger, because you got to be smart and you cannot be caught up in some of this BS that can get you in trouble and really hurt your career. And so hopefully Reuben Foster has learned from that and he keeps everything straight. And, you know, he's been too close to some things that I think the league's still going to try to throw a couple games at him. So I would right now I'd put the over under on 2 games, just because when you have right or wrong, and I don't agree with it, but the way the NFL treats weed, just the fact that he had it in him or in his car or wherever he was, even though it was dismissed, just to have that involved with you. And he had that diluted sample at the combine, even though he didn't test positive. And then the misdemeanor gun charge. I think there's enough there where I think the league is going to throw down something for him. So maybe he gets 2 games and appeals down to 1, or they try to give him 4 games and he appeals down to 2 or something like that. But I'd be surprised if he doesn't get a little something, just knowing the way the NFL is.
Absolutely. Well, Brian, once again, man, I appreciate you jumping on here and joining me. I love these crossover shows. We're definitely going to get together as soon as the Broncos and the 49ers get ready to play each other in 2018. I look forward to continuing to follow all the great work that you do over there at Locked On 49ers, and I look forward to when we get to talk again about our Broncos and our 49ers.
Absolutely, man. I'm looking forward to it. Always a pleasure talking to you, Cody. We'll do it again when this regular season game gets going.
Perfect. Sounds good, Brian.
All right, man. Take care. All right. Thanks again to Cody for joining me on the show. Always great to talk to him. Be back tomorrow with a little Winky Wednesday episode. Get those mailbag questions in either on Twitter at BD Peacock or email LockedOn49ers@gmail.com. And I'll talk to you guys tomorrow right here on Locked On 49ers.